geography of the American Indians. But there are some things you might not know about him. He was born in Philadelphia, was educated at Westtown, Haverford College, the University of Pennsylvania, the Technical University of München, Germany, and Penn State University. He was an engineer designer for Lincoln Bell Company and for the F.J. Stoke Machine Company. He was professor and chairman of the engineering department at Haverford College and an instructor in physics, German, and photography, and chairman of the graduate curriculum in social and technical assistance at Haverford. And he was chairman of the Society of Automotive Engineers of Philadelphia. In his work with the American Indians, he was chairman of the National Indian Program Committee and director of three work camps for the Philadelphia Yearly Meeting. He was director and general secretary of the Indian Rights Association and editor of Indian Truths, also a member of the Friends Committee on National Legislation for the Indian Committee. Is the
Indian Rights Association?
Oh, well, the Indian Truths. Okay.
Thanks, Ryan. Thank you all for coming on a beautiful afternoon. I don't know why you come indoors. When the Society of Friends was being formed in the 1650s, there was considerable interest in Indians. Because not only did they have a mandate to spread the gospel, but also there was the belief, my friends, that there was that of God in every person, and persons were not innately sinful. And if that were true, then it would be true for Indians too, and many people didn't think it was true of Indians, so friends wanted to find out. So George Fox came to this country, this area, in 1672 and 1673, and traveled amongst Indians, living with them, being guided by them, being fed by them, and he met with them, held friends meetings with them to bring the gospel to them, and he found out that they were very hospitable, said they were very loving, they were trustworthy and truthful, they lived a simple life, they were egalitarian, so that their esteem, respect for women was high and for children. When they met in their councils, everyone was might participate, and they came to these decisions under the guidance of a leader whom they called a king, but he wasn't like a European king at all. He was like clerk of the Philadelphia yearly meeting or a clerk of the monthly meeting. He was the one who formulated the consensus. People agreed with it, and that was fine. So friends felt very congenial with what they learned of Indians. And even before George Fox came, some other friends had come in the 1650s. One at Martha's Vineyard said, "We received no small love from the Indians, the like we could not receive from the English. They were taught to love strangers." In 1658, a friend who was beaten up by the English was given refuge and healed by the Indians, said, "We found these Indians more sober and Christian-like toward us than the Christians so-called." The next year, John Taylor on Long Island said, "They heard me soberly. They confessed to the truth I spoke. They were loving and kind afterwards to friends." In 1667, John Bowater stated that he was more kindly used by the poor Indians in America and by some pretended Christians here in England. This map shows where the yearly meetings were and where Indian tribes were. A little bit later, but it shows that it was important to friends to deal with Indians, know about them, know where they lived, and where the yearly meetings were too, from the same map.
Uh-oh.
I'm sorry, so I'm seeing the proceed back. Oh. Can we move it to zero? I'll try to push the right button. Young man, that overweight industry. also use the theme repeatedly, connection with his peaceful kingdom, of the same treaty. I think this one is at the Gilcrease Museum in Tulsa. It's also Oklahoma. And this is a representation of the same treaty with Brigham Young and Tamiyan. It is in this museum in Harrisburg. It did belong to Philadelphia Yearly Reading for a while. It had been in the bank in Philadelphia. Then it was bought by Bob Yarnell. And after it had been at the 15th and Ray Street for some years, it was cleaned up, restored, and given to the museum by Paul Downville. This gave me an info to say, by one of the land company's agents. times four women. Who cultivated concern to learn more about Indians. He made that very famous statement in his journal. Love was the first motion. Then arose a desire to spend some time with the Indians, that I might feel and understand their life and the spirit they live in. If happily I might receive some instruction from them, or they be in any degree helped forward by my following the readings of the truth amongst them. Very remarkable statement. He felt so under the weight of this that he persuaded his meeting to give him a minute to let him travel with a friend. The wife did not expect to ever see him again. This was the time of his French Indian Wars, when people were being killed by Indians up in the Wyoming Valley area, Wyoming. But no ill befell him. It was a strenuous journey to go there in such times. And war was on. The Indians brought him back by canoe to safeguard his trip. There were some friends out in the Monongahela Valley who were attacked by Indians on the warpath. But when their leader said that these were Quakers, and the children of William Penn, they protected them and maintained no ill. This painting illustrates a famous story called The White Feather. In north of Albany, New York, there was an area where the Connecticut settlers were encroaching on Indian land. And Indians were there on one side, and I think most of these Presbyterians on the other side, and close to the Indian land, and they persuaded some Quakers to settle there as a sort of a buffer. Well, they were attending meeting one Sunday morning when the Indians on the warpath were out to anybody they could who was encroaching on their lands. When they came in here and saw all was quiet, you know, no weapons, they were influenced and they stayed peaceful. Friends invited them to come to dinner with them afterwards, and all was amicable. That I would show a picture of Indian Hannah. You've seen the monument down on Route 52 before you get to Longwood, before you get to the anvil. Tells how on William Webb's land, which is this land right here, Indian Hannah lived. She would wander from, she had a cabin, but she would go from farm to farm, selling the baskets that she made. And this painting is in the land at the end. I'll give them a free plug. They're open now. This painting was painted by Good Rams down Street Road, just before you get to Thompson. The model is Mary Pratt, who worked at the Centennial Hardware Store. And she's a swarthy, same person, I don't quite know her ancestry. But she made a good model for Indian Hannah. And the basket is really a basket that Indian Hannah made, I think it's and the Historical Society, and the costume that she is wearing is one that Schoonover, a famous illustrator along with N.C. Wyatt, he collected that in Canada, so it's not a Lenape dress, but it's an authentic Indian dress. So it makes a nice picture, and it's done at the Lenape Inn. She is buried, she died in 1802, and was buried at the Indian home over at Embryo. This is a compact or a statement that I don't know if it can be sharpened up or not. It's not too sharp anyhow, but it's signed by a lot of that's good. There we go. That's good. Signed by a lot of local people, most of the right places, guaranteeing the care of Indian Hannah. She would be taken care of in her later years. A letter in 1791 from Cornplanter, obviously written by the Nicholson, whose name is down there too. Cornplanter just puts his mark. But he writes to Philadelphia friends to ask them to take his son and another Seneca boy to be educated in Philadelphia, just as though they were the sons of the Lorette de France, which was done. Cornblatter was a good friend and very helpful to friends. However, in his later years, I'm afraid he was, I don't think he was dissatisfied with the Quakers, but he was antagonistic to a change in culture. In 1793, Indians wrote to George Washington asking that he send some sober and trustworthy people, including some Quakers, to come to Buffalo Creek to help them at a time of treaty making. And this drawing shows Colonel Pickering seated with some aides and in the background some army officers and some Indians, and in the middle background are some Quakers. They didn't sign the treaty, but they were there as observers, and you see that the Indians were not deployed, if possible. That has happened more than once in those days. In 1794, there was a treaty again with Colonel Pickering, but with the Senecas. And that was, this is a reenactment at Canandaigua with Don Duvall, acting as Colonel Pickering, reading the actual wording of the treaty at a time of commemoration and a time of protest against the building of the Kinsler Dam, which was in violation of that treaty, which guaranteed that the Indians would never be disturbed in their use and enjoyment of their land. Of course, that's exactly what didn't happen. They were deprived of it, and the dam was built and the land was flooded. This is the area in 1797, Seneca reservations. About 1848, the Ogden Land Company, mostly foreign money, bought up, they corrupted some of the Indian leaders, bribed them, kept them drunk, and got them to sign away their land. Well, of course, that's not the Indian way of doing things. No one person would have the right to sell an Indian's reservation any more than I would have the right to sell General Motors if I owned a little bit of stock there. But they did lose their land. Friends went to the president and to the Congress to protest, and they persuaded the president that it had been fraudulent. But they didn't think they could really do anything about it. But the Allegheny Reservation and the San Rogers Reservation were returned. Here's Allegheny down here. Here, and the Cattaraugus Reservation, but all of Buffalo was lost. But they paid the Indians $75,000 for it, and they were able to buy this land, as the Tonawanda Reservation which still exists. And the Tuscarora Reservation still exists, but the others do not. In 1848, that was when that fraudulent transaction took place. The Indians were so incensed by the way their old clan system of chieftains was functioning that they established the Seneca Nation of Indians, so that the Allegheny and Cattaraugus reservations are run by an elective system, very much like our states and counties are run. The Tonawanda and Tuscarora are still run in the old system with clan mothers selecting the chieftains, and they solve their problems, political problems, well, religious problems too, in council. On the Allegheny Reservation, along the Allegheny River, Pennsylvania, New York border, a handsome lake lived with his half-brother, Cornblatter. And they had asked, or Cornblatter had asked, to build up your friends, send some teachers. And so Holliday Jackson and Henry Simmons went up there to teach. Teach reading and writing, because the people, they wanted to spread the gospel, but they didn't want to preach it and not have anybody understand it. They wanted the Indians to be able to read the book themselves. And they also taught blacksmithing and millwright and milling, agriculture. So they had ran a sort of school in Cornblatter's house. Well, Handsome Lake was a drunk who was sick and not good for much. but it seemed to soak in somehow. And he learned a lot that the Quakers were teaching. So, on the 15th of June, 1799, the corn planter being from home about 3/4 of a mile, where he was, had been employed to build him a house, and where we were engaged in working the schoolhouse, an express, that is to say a messenger, came to him and his brother or stepbrother was dying, et cetera, et cetera. This is the diary written on the very day when this all happened. The handsome Lake went into a trance, came to, after a while, they thought he was dead, came to and told his message. And that was very largely Quakerism. And that is the basis of the religion of the Longhouse today. And what he said is recited every year, late January, in the Longhouse, Code of Handsome Lake, a moral, ethical religion, very much influenced by Quakers. It's not written down, it has been written down and translated, but it is not read. The spokesman in the Longhouse recited for about a half an hour every morning for 9 days. Memorized. Very much like trance, you're supposed to know what you want to say. This is the Longhouse, the nearest one to this is Cold Spring Longhouse, right near to where Corn Planter's house was. I think you can see it looks like a meeting house. One door for the men, one door for the women, portions, size, are very much like a meeting house. We have been there many times. There are ceremonies and other ceremonies, of which there are about 5 in a year. They don't meet as a regular thing every Sunday. They're likely to meet pretty much every Saturday night and dance more or less socially. Ceremonial. The Quaker Bridge, very near to that Longhouse. In 1804, the Quakers bought some land just off the reservation from the Ogden Land Company, and they established a mission center there. And this is that area that still called Quaker Bridge in Allegheny State Park. The bridge isn't there anymore since the flooding by the Kinsler Dam. The bridge has been picked up and moved elsewhere where it's still useful. The area is still called Quaker Bridge. And in 1852, they built this boarding school, the only place in New York State where Indian children could get an education. And public school was open to them. It existed until about 1935. When the public schools were available to Indian children, and the building was wearing out, and it's pretty expensive to run a boarding school with no tuition coming in, and run by Philadelphia during the Indian Committee. So that no longer exists. But they had a large farm there, and the farm buildings existed quite a long time after the school was closed down. And here, on an Indian day in 1962, a cavalcade of participants on the New York State Indian Day are going by just to say thanks to friends for having run this school and this agricultural station with a farm since 1804. Clara Finch was the widow of the superintendent of the school. And after the school closed down and after her husband died, she stayed on as a worker for the Indian Committee in the community. Involvement with her and a friend of people. Very much beloved. The painting is by a cynical young woman, Shirley Lanata. And that building in the background was named for her and built by the Presbyterian Church. It's an annex to the Presbyterian Church, Clara Finch Memorial Room. The people in the foreground are graduates of the Tunisasa School. That school was shut down in 35, and here it is 30 years later, they're still having Alumni Day. That was 20 years ago, so I don't know if they're still having Alumni Day. I'm sure most of those people are dead by now. I said, I know what it is, the third from the right on the back row is a dark coat. And Everett Parker, I know he's gone because I attended his funeral. And he was the one Seneca Indian whom I know was a member of Philadelphia Year Meeting. And he was the editor of the Buffalo Newspaper. Here in that cloud-pink room, representatives of the Army Engineers are telling the Seneca Indians what's going to happen to their land after the Kingsman Dam is built. There are This is the reservation, the Allegheny Reservation. The red is the part that is flooded. And the height of the dam was adjusted just so that the city of Salamanca, the top in yellow, would not be flooded. But a lot of Indian land, but the city of Salamanca was formed by railroad workers who came in a century ago and just squatted on Indian land and usurped it. They went to, they just tried to take it away from the Indians, but went to the courts and the Indians won. But the white people who formed Salamanca paid trivial rents, like $5 a year per square block where the hotel was. Well, the leases were for 99 years, and that just about run out. So anybody writing another lease has to contend with what the future's going to bring. And the leases have changed considerably, but at least it stood up in court that it still belongs to the Indians, even though they can't evict the settlers. Well, there's very little land that's any good after the flooding. There's a little area here, and there's a little area here in orange. Everything else is either a steep hillside or a marsh or a rocky, unusable. So all the Indians who used to live scattered along the river are now in sort of two little letter towns, you might say, in those two small areas. Here, Bob Haynes, the chairman of the Indian Committee, and Walt Taylor are discussing what kind of housing might be made available. Bob Haynes is talking with Lena Snow, one of the clan mothers, the turtle clan, and she's telling him where he can find the herbs. He can rub on his hair to make his hair grow. She was a grand old woman. Here, Bob is being adopted with Harry Watt and the Corbett Sundown in a very interesting ceremony. Sometimes it's a little bit comic. They check his knee reaction to see, and look at his teeth to see. Make a good warrior. But it's really a solemn occasion also. And it was a marvelous occasion, which I can say because I experienced it the next year. Indian Day in New York State. They adopted me, not me personally so much as a representative of Philadelphia here and meeting friends for the history of the last 50 years more. But I had an opportunity to speak over the microphone. And so I said that I had a dream. This was 4 days before Martin Luther King had a dream. My dream was that the Iroquois Indians would make a gift to the United Nations of the Great Tree of Peace. Now, if you don't know what the Great Tree of Peace is, you can read this little booklet. We similar lying on the stage. It tells, in a brief form, it's an abstract, the story. Now, a gift to an Indian is very important. Actually, I'm in a dream. There's a story that the Conrad Weiser and the Indian chief Chickalemi were walking together, and Chickalemi said, "I had a dream that you gave me that rifle." And Conrad Weiser knew enough that he really had to give him the rifle. So he did. But after a while, Conrad Weiser said, "I had a dream that you gave me that island over there." And so Chickalemi had to return in kind. I don't know if my dream will ever come to fruition or not. I've mentioned it another time beside this occasion. Of course, it's really for the Indians to do, not for me. But I still think it's a good idea. Because the Great Tree of Peace is a marvelous symbol, and it's pure American, and I hope you read the book. Walt Taylor talking with Senator Keating, and Walt was very useful this way. You get Brooks Atkinson direct to the New Yorker and the New York Times. You could get set up conferences with U.S. senators, with states, legislators, governor, and stir up people to either try to prevent, I came too late, But at least the compensation that the Indians received for this was much greater than had ever happened before, when the Indians had been the tailors had been honored by the Seneca Indians for their years of service at a banquet. When that old longhouse, which you saw at the Cold Spring, was demolished because of flooding, they built a new longhouse. This is it. They never let me photograph inside the longhouse, but this is a Quaker meeting going on. And I said, this might I be permitted? And they said, well, if you think it's all right, well, go ahead. So here we're having the Quaker meeting in the longhouse. Bob Haines is speaking. Notice the smoke in the air. See this man smoking back here. That wouldn't happen in a friend's meeting, but I've spoken to Bonnie Deloria and others that smoke too much. And he said, well, tobacco is medicine for Indians, maybe poison for white people. But of course, the tobacco that Indians use ceremonially is not the tobacco that is sold commercially. Much different. But I want to point out, this bench was in the old longhouse, and so was this one. The other benches came from Morristown Friends Meeting House. Bob Haines, when the Orthodox Meeting House was closed down, they made a gymnasium out of it over at Morristown. Bob Haines got the benches and had been shipped up by a trucker. And when the trucker found out that a Quaker meeting was giving the benches to an Indian longhouse, he reduced the charge on his what had been contracted for. He thought that was a real mess. This is the bench that they two singers sit on, astride, one at this end and one at this end, and they feed their turtle rattles in the middle in here. They feed them so much that the wood is obviously worn out, and you have to insert a new board in there. Lawrence Lindley on the left, who's a friend who has given his life to Indian work, still lives in India, was General Secretary of Indian Rights for a long, long time, until he got to be about 75 until he served at retirement. We had another friend serve that office for a couple of years, and he insisted on living in Oklahoma, and then I took over for a few years. That house on the left is what was then the council house. Lorenzo Pierce and George Herring. He was the president of the Seneca Nation. Now, inside the new council house, after the money was paid by the United States for the indemnification for taking the land, the Linus Painter, who was an Indian work friend, chairman of the Associated Committee of Friends on Indian Affairs for their work in Oklahoma, and he's speaking, introducing David and Jamie Owl. Now, David Owl, I continue to, I guess the Cherokee, was the deceased. He was a Presbyterian minister at Allegheny for Cattaraugus for a long time, until he retired and went to Oklahoma, and he was the pastor in the Friends Church, until he retired and came back home. But this is a meeting of the Associated Committee of Friends on Indian Affairs, which was founded in 1869 under what they call Grant's Peace Policy. The Army had done such a bad job running Indian reservations that Grant was persuaded that Quakers could do it better. And so he said, okay, nominate some people and I'll appoint them. So that's when that started. Here in another room in that same council house, the president of the Seneca Nation is telling members, Quakers, members of the Associated Committee of Friends of Indian Affairs, about their government. Now this Associated Committee was the first action that was taken by number of hearing meetings, the first cooperative work between different hearing meetings. Previously, the hearing meetings have been totally autonomous and haven't done anything in time. I might also say the Indian Committee is one of the wedges or starts in the consolidation or the organic unity of the Saints and Orthodox, because and they cooperated too long before the meetings had joined together. Here at Carlisle, Pennsylvania, was this Indian school. Captain Pratt got an old hospital and used it to start a school for Indians. He saw to it that it was a long way from home, and he saw to it that no Indian child got a letter from home at not written in English. And he saw to it that none of his graduates ever went back home again if he could help it. Spotted Tail, famous chief of the Rosebud Sioux on the right, he sent his son to school and supported it quite a bit until his son died there, and that soured him. And he wouldn't have anything to do with it after that. It was very much a one-way street, sort of a check valve. He could get in, but he had to stop being an Indian if he went to Carlisle School. But three ladies there, and Quaker ladies, who were visiting the school, and Quakers of that time pretty much agreed with this policy of changing Indians from being Indians into being white people. About 100 years ago, friends from Ohio and Indiana set up a mission station for the Cherokee. This is the house down at the end of the Ravens Fork Stream. And that has been the site of at least 5 American Friends Service Corps work camps and 3 work camps at Haverford College, where there are graduate students and had some practice in intercultural field work. These are the superintendents who were nominated by Friends and appointed by General President Grant to serve in the agencies in Oklahoma. Largely from around here, there's a man in the middle, his name is Brenton Darlington, and nobody came from Chester County. Thomas Batty was one of these friends. Janet Batty Snyder's great uncle, or something of the sort. Who has written a book about the life and adventures of a Quaker among the Indians, worked with the Kiowa Indians, who lived, as you saw in that picture. And here is Chief Kingdom.